Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 94 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday goodness and badness all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight, as always, are my good friends, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. And Mr. Bradford.
Does anybody know what time it is?
No, I don't.
Tool time.
That's right. Christmas Creeps is proud to present Santa the Toyman Taylor.
I regret even starting this. Can check.
Can check. Drinking the last of my Deep River Saved by the Brew coffee beers
tonight. Ooh. Is it Saved by the Bell themed?
Oh, you bet it is.
That's amazing. I'm actually drinking a coffee beer as well.
Really? What you got?
Mine is a Stone X Modern Times Wizards and Gargoyles Hazy Coffee IPA.
I was with you until you said IPA.
It's not very, like, IPA forward. It's not too bad.
Well, I mean, as long as you enjoy it, that's what counts.
Yes.
J-Man, you got anything over there?
Sparkling water.
Nothing classy.
But the best. So, gentle friends, the Christmas countdown has finally dipped down into the double digits. The first brisk chill of fall is in the air. The Halloween candy is officially in the stores. The holiday creep is well and truly upon us. And I couldn't hate 2020 more than I do right now.
Why is that, Joe?
Just about everything, Brad.
Yeah, that's
if you follow the news at all, there's that.
Yeah.
If you've been alive for the last 6 months, congratulations, you've made it. But there's also that.
Yeah.
And there are quite a lot of video games out this week that we would honestly rather be playing. So with all that said, let's get to work.
Okay.
Oh, so
such is our dim duty.
C'est la vie. Yeah, this is the life we've chosen. But before we get into the Santa Claus 3 tonight, I do have. We haven't done this in a while. I do have some holiday treats to sample on the show. I know this is an audio medium, and the last and worst thing in the world is hearing someone eat food. But we're going to do that again, because why not? We love you. Tonight, I've got two things here that I want to sample. I've got a Kit Kat bar pumpkin pie flavored.
Have I had that? I think I've had that. It's white chocolate, right?
It looks like it, yeah. It's like very like beige chocolate.
Honestly, out of pretty much anything that you've eaten on this show, that might be the one that I could mess with.
Okay. Well, following this is probably the thing you will least want to mess with, so just hanging tight. Here goes nothing.
No, I had apple pie Kit Kat, not pumpkin pie Kit Kat.
How was that?
It's the kind of thing I say about a lot of stuff like the birthday cake flavored Bang energy drink. It's like, well, it tastes like what you said it does, but I'm not sure that that's a good thing.
It's like 90% of the flavored Kit Kats. You know, you guys know about all the ones they have in Japan, right? There's like 2 different flavors of Kit Kats.
Yeah, tuna flavored Kit Kat.
So this is definitely like they took the chocolate and just flavored it with pumpkin spice, and I don't know that I care for that.
Okay.
It's too sweet and too spicy, which is a weird thing to say about a Kit Kat bar. I'm not a fan. But now I have to wash it down with a drink, and that leads me to the item number 2 on today's holiday taste test. I do have a jug of International Delight Buddy the Elf themed caramel waffle cookie coffee creamer.
Nope, I'm out.
And I have a shot glass in the left hand and the bottle in my right hand.
Oh my god, you're not putting it in coffee? You're just gonna do this. You're going to raw dog it.
I did just say I have a coffee beer, but that's a step too far.
Yeah, don't ruin your beer, please.
In the coffee beer. But I am going to do a shot of this creamer just to give it a, you know, just to get the flavor of it. And
you're disgusting. I'm losing so much respect for you right now. No, I'm just kidding.
Like,
Go for it.
I filled a shot glass with this stuff, and honestly, like, I wish I hadn't done this, because this is more creamer than I would put in a coffee on a normal day.
Do it.
What is wrong with me? All right, here goes nothing. So,
how did walk us through it, Joe?
I now have diabetes. This is pure sugar. I can definitely taste sort of the caramel flavor and a little bit of that waffle flavor, which is interesting. This can only be made better by the bitterness of coffee, because drinking it straight is very much the wrong thing to do.
I think they have a warning label on the bottle that you're not supposed to drink this sort of thing straight, Joe. It's kind of like how with some cleaning products, you need to dilute them in water. Same concept.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at it here. No, it just says, oh my God, Santa, I know him. That's really not much of a warning.
There's no nutrition facts. It's just Buddy the Elf quotes.
Yeah, basically. Oh, here we go. Feel the love or your money back.
Well,
I could definitely call this number for a full refund, because I didn't feel the love, but that's very much because I did not use this product as intended.
Are you going to bury the lead that you drank it straight? Tactical omission when you're calling the line.
Oh, when I called them. Oh yeah. I could do that.
Gonna send you a check in the mail for what? $2.59 mm-hmm. in about 6 months.
I got a check from the insurance company for $13 yesterday.
That's so dumb.
Nah,
$13. I mean, it's $13, but
yeah. So, I have to go put this back away from me, because the sight of it is just going to destroy me. So, I'll be back in just one hot moment.
Hey, John, how's it going?
It's going okay. How you doing?
Doing all right. All things considered, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to watch this damn movie, though.
Oh, just wait, bud.
I have returned.
Hello.
Hello and welcome. So that nightmare is behind us now.
But we have many more nightmares to come.
Oh, the night is long and full of terrors. So, hey, friends. This is a sequel to our previous episode on Santa Claus 2. We're going to finish the trilogy with Santa Claus 3 tonight.
Finish the fight,
as it were. And okay, first question on the table. Had either of you seen this before?
No!
Fuck no, what the hell's wrong with you?
I have to ask these questions! There's
I know.
Form letter that I have to fill out before I send this back into Movie Podcast HQ.
Joe?
Yeah?
Had you seen this film before?
In bits and pieces. Not ever, like, at once. Altogether.
Is this the one that you saw the trailer to about 4 bajillion times?
Yeah, I was working at a movie theater when this came out. So, like the months before it, I had seen the trailer 100 times. And then when it came out, I would have to do like theater checks. So I saw like bits and pieces of it, like on and off for like a month and a half. And I kind of got the gist of it, but putting it all together here is a much different experience than watching it, you know, jumbled up like some kind of a weird art film. I kind of prefer that method, to be honest.
Yeah, I was about to ask. So, based on your piecemeal viewing of this, did this end up better or worse than you imagined it as a whole?
Oh, far worse.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because, like, when you're working in a theater and you pop into, you know, a room to check the audience and whatever, you kind of see bits and pieces of this thing, and you can kind of piece together what's supposed to be happening in your head.
But your imagination glue was much better than what actually the filmmakers came up with in this
there,
case.
Yes, there it is. Because like I knew sort of the vague plot of the movie. It's just that everything that I knew and assumed happens in the last half hour of this hour and a half feature film.
And that is really the rub, and we're going to get into that. But the most interesting part of the movie that they could have done a lot more with lasts about, what, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah, this movie is just, it's basically an hour and a half, 15 minutes of Christmas of the Cranks and 15 minutes of It's a Wonderful Life.
or 15 minutes of Back to the Future Part 2 1985B.
That as well.
Yeah. It's you know, six of one and a half dozen of the other, except... Oh, God, yeah. So
you reminded me of a couple different things all at once. This was written by Ed Dechter and John J. Strauss, who also are credited with writing the Lizzie McGuire movie. I worked at a Walmart for one summer. I mentioned this before, I know. And I worked in electronics for that summer. I ended up seeing the Lizzie McGuire movie about 700 fucking times.
The entirety of it?
Yes, because it would play, and then as soon as it was done, it would start playing again.
They just had it on a loop on, was it on like the TVs as the demo? Or
yes, it was on the display TVs as a demo, yeah.
Good Lord. I guess this was in the age before they had like the custom in-store loop that would just play ads for the the store.
Yeah, this was 2003, yeah.
But was this from, do you know if this was like a mandate from corporate that it's like this month we're playing the Lizzie McGuire movie? Or did somebody in the electronics department, like your manager, Ron, just make the decision to put on the Lizzie McGuire movie on loop?
It honestly would not surprise me if this was something handed out from corporate, because corporate is that fucking petty about shit like that in any corporation.
When you go to a
Jimmy John's, and all Jimmy John's have the same like 20 signs up, because those are the 20 signs that corporate approved.
It's like I
can definitely imagine somebody at Walmart saying like, we need to pick a movie that's vaguely inoffensive to everybody that will play on the loop nonstop and nobody will ever complain about it. And somehow they landed on the Lizzie McGuire movie.
I would think that they probably got some sort of discount or something from Disney, question mark?
Maybe. That's possible.
Lizzie McGuire's is a Disney joint, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They cut some sort of deal with the big D in the kids' table to... if they play it for X number of whatevers, they can...
That's true.
Mickey toys are 35 cents less from their distribution, whatever. I don't know.
Corporate intrigue is fun, isn't it, kids?
These fucking guys, though, Dechter and Strauss, the four movies they're mainly credited with, or at least Dechter, I don't know about Strauss as well, but are The Santa Claus 2, The Santa Claus 3, The Lizzie McGuire Movie, and... What's the last one?
Shaggy Dog, the revival that they did.
There's Something About Mary.
Really?
Wow. Wow, that's a hell of a jump.
Yeah.
So wait, they wrote these movies?
They have some varying level of story and screenplay credits on those, all four of those.
I gotcha. Okay. Meanwhile, the Santa Claus 3... directed by Michael Lembeck, who, among other things, directed the sequel, or the second movie, rather, for that matter. And, let's see, did he do the first one? Of course not. So the second one and the third one are very similar in a lot of ways. And I think that might be, you know, that might be explain why, is because they have the same director, same writing team. They were obviously sort of working in tandem here, but... The problem with this third one, and we'll get into this, is the plot feels like any random episode of any TV show. Nothing happens, and then what does happen gets, you know, reverted back to the status quo in time for the end credits. It's a sitcom stretched to feature length, and I wanted to kill myself for roughly half of this movie.
Yeah, it's a couple of generic sitcom plots thrown together. It's, oh, the in-laws are coming. Oh, work is really hard right now and I'm having trouble with the wife. Oh, my rival is trying to steal my business.
Oh, let's do a Christmas special. Yeah. It's like, how many TV shows have you seen that have done the It's a Wonderful Life riff, where the main character gets to see what life would be like without him, or if things had been different? Like, everybody has done that at this point. And for a Christmas movie to do it, I really feel like is like the lowest, laziest form of, I don't know. I don't even know what to call it. It's just that bad, that lazy, and that uninspired. But here we are with Santa Claus 3. Like, good, da, 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 no.
Good night, everybody.
So what I want to do, I want to do our... recap challenge again this week, and I'm going to ask Jonathan Five to recap the plot of this movie in 60 seconds or less, and I'm going to ask you to be as thorough as possible.
All right.
Can you do this?
I can try.
Can you do this thing that I ask? Okay.
I can do lots of things. Do it correctly, do it well. That's the challenge.
Doing it correctly and well is very much what I'm asking of you tonight.
Okay.
So for the uninitiated, if you're somehow tuning in with us now, hi, welcome to the show. We love you. What we do here from time to time is I will ask one of my co-hosts or a guest to recap the plot of the movie we're about to discuss in 60 seconds or less. And however much time is left on the clock when time runs out, we'll donate, you know, a dollar per second to a charity of our choosing, basically. It's our way of contributing to society in some positive fashion.
Bradford will pony up this time since he's been so quiet.
That is perfectly fair.
I'll do it. John, you choose. Dealer's right. choice.
Ugh, this coffee beer has not washed the flavor of sugar out of my mouth yet.
It's one I'm of sorry. The, I imagine it's that kind of sugar, like synthetic sugary situation that like coats your tongue, and you're not going to get rid of it until like you eat an actual meal, I imagine, or brush your teeth.
Yeah, going back to it, it's the kind of sugar that's meant to like bond itself to coffee. You're not meant to drink it straight.
It's bonded itself to your flesh. Now you have yes. become one.
We are creamer. I'm a coffee themed Spider-Man villain. We are creamer. Okay, J-Man, you ready?
Yeah, sure. How long do I have?
You have 60 seconds.
60 seconds, okay.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Mrs. Claus is pregnant. Jack Frost is complaining that he doesn't have his own holiday. All the other figures tell him to shut the hell up because he's junior varsity. He ruins everything while Santa's in-laws are in town, and also Judge Reinhold's in town. So Santa does this from a wife. I wish I was never been born at all. Jack Frost takes over. He ruins everything, turns Christmas into a holiday resort. Then they trick him into giving it back to Santa. Lucy melts his heart, and everything's better. The end.
Okay, that was 26 good seconds.
That was incredibly concise. I think you actually hit everything?
Pretty much, yeah. That's
the plot.
So Bradford is on the hook now for $34.
All right, Joe or John, let me know where you want me to send that.
Oh, yeah, I'll give you my Venmo later.
I was expecting that.
I was going to say I'll post a link to the charity in the show notes, but if it's
Cash App in bio.
J-Man's bank account, well, I mean,
the human fund.
It's money for people.
We'll give it to the usual suspect.
Okay. Kevin Spacey does not need your money.
No. Or my usual choice, SPCA the Triad.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. So, where to start with the Santa Claus 3 tonight? I guess the first thing that we have to establish right up front
is that Bernard got canned.
Yes! Bernard isn't even here! The movie, the IMDb says that Bernard was off working on that TV show Numbers.
Okay.
Oh boy.
It was in the whole, it was one of those things like in the whole wake of Lost where everybody was trying to make like suspenseful, thinky serials that don't give you enough information to actually know what the plot is about. And so
I think wasn't this one that was about, it was basically Rain Man. It was like two brothers and one of them was really good at math and they solved crimes because of math.
Yeah. It was like, hey, let's take the Law and Order formula and turn it into a science fiction spectacle.
So it wasn't like a big serial thing. Am I thinking of The Happening or something?
No, but you're on the right track. Like it's like vaguely like, why is he so good at math? And is there something strange going on here? But no, it's like it's CSI, but with the sci-fi premise.
Okay. Was there a show called The Happening, or is that just a Shyamalan movie?
Oh, I don't even know what I'm thinking of.
Are you thinking of the Killing?
No, I'll come to it. I'll come back to it later.
Anyway, Bernard is not here.
Yeah.
Ben Krimholtz was off doing something else, but my real suspicion is that, as we mentioned last time, they slashed the budget on this film like crazy, and they just didn't have the money to cast him again. Because instead, what's his name? Curtis, the big dumbass from the second movie, is now the head elf for some reason.
And he's dressed kind of like a cowboy, so I'm going to call him Cowboy Curtis from now on. He's got a neckerchief.
Congratulations on failing upward, Cowboy Curtis.
I'm going to allow it, yes. And once again, Cowboy Curtis is responsible for everything. that happens.
Including everything that goes right now.
But no, what I was going to say was the first thing this movie wants us to know is that Santa Claus fucks. Because Mrs. Claus is having a baby.
Did they retcon her in a fat suit? I think they kind of did, right?
They kind of did.
She's pregnant, but she's definitely, like, slimmer, whereas in the credits of 2, they have her, like, fully, like, Santa Claus'd, Mrs. Claus'd out, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, you didn't imagine that. That definitely happened.
that wasn't something I dreamed up. Okay.
But I guess, and the only explanation is it's 4 years later, maybe she realized, oh, I don't want this Santa fat, so I'm going to have to slim down for some reason.
I don't think it works like that.
I know, but...
What if it does work like that and Scott's just too damn lazy to do it?
It's entirely possible. I mean, in the first film, we see him shave his face and then it immediately grows back, which is not good, but... And then in the second one, he uses like Santa magic to make himself look good. So it's not like he can't.
Oh yeah,
magic. Remember? So maybe she's just like wasting all of the Santa magic on herself.
Maybe.
But the missus is having a baby, and the big
we didn't mention the fact that this whole thing is done with a framing device, because why not?
Oh yeah, it's fucking flashback. Thanks, movie.
Yeah, because she's a school teacher. Now, and she's teaching elves.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Remember that whole thing? Remember that whole trope, too?
So right. how long are the elves in school before they just go and do child labor? Is it like 3 weeks?
200 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah, so she's explaining the plot of the movie to, what's her name? It's the girl from Little Miss Sunshine.
Abigail Breslin. It's Curtis's sister.
Olive. Yeah, it's... Yes, yes, all of these is correct. Olive, the other reindeer, is Curtis's sister. Scott is busy dealing with, you know, getting things ready for Christmas, getting the toy shop and the elves and the reindeer, all that stuff ready for Christmas. Meanwhile, she is...
Mega pregnant,
and kind of pissed off that he's wasting all of his time being Santa Claus and not soon-to-be father to her soon-to-be child.
Here's a question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How has more power fucking Tim Allen Santa not completely automated and industrialized this fucking workshop?
I mean, we have to separate what the actual human Tim Allen would likely do. Probably very anti-union. I'm just going to go out on a branch here. I don't know. We gotta separate Tim Allen from Scott Calvin.
I got an answer for this one, actually.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay.
We saw what automation did in the last film.
Oh, that's true.
And it led to a fascist regime. So I'm pretty sure they're a little wary of automation in this one.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Tim Allen doesn't have that many problems with fascist regimes when it comes down to it.
In all fairness, you're absolutely right. But again, we're trying to differentiate Tim Allen from Scott Calvin.
Yes.
All right. I mean, I don't think the movie goes to that effort, but we can, I guess.
Yeah, we will do what the film cannot.
Speaking of, let's just talk about the character of Scott Calvin for a moment. Did he seem like less of a sarcastic asshole this time around than in 2?
Yes.
I kind of got that. I don't know if they were like intentionally toning it back, or the writers just forgot what they wrote second one.
When he did start being an asshole, it was usually two people that were kind of already yanking his crank. It was usually to like the other adult figures who were already,
yeah,
kind of being nuisances.
Not to children who are ostensibly working for him for free.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And also there's the fact that this movie has entirely too much plot to waste on Tim Allen yelling at children. There's just not enough time to waste.
Blissfully, this movie was 93 minutes. They easily could have added another 20 of Tim Allen yelling at children.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm sure there's like a director's cut where it's nothing but that for the first half hour. And it's just to satisfy Tim Allen's own ego. They did the Tim Allen cut and gave it to Tim Allen and then cut it all out and put it out in theaters for everybody else.
Locked in the Disney vault, there's just a half hour reel of Tim Allen committing child abuse.
Hey, Disney Plus, come on, release that to the public. Why not? What else?
Give me the what's the director's name again? Give me the Snyder cut of Santa Claus 3. Come
Give
on.
Give us the limbic cut.
The limbic cut.
That's the cut of meat on the film that, like, nobody wants to eat, is the limbic cut.
That's the cheapest one that you have to put in a stew.
Yeah, exactly. Oh boy. So
it's like in the fucking Great Outdoors when he does the steak challenge and there's like just nothing but fat left. You're like, no, you didn't finish it yet.
Anyway, so I don't want to call this the main plot because it doesn't feel like the main plot to me. But the main plot is that Carol, Mrs. Claus, is about to have a baby, and she kind of resents Scott for basically taking her away from her family. So they get the idea of, well, why don't we just bring her family to the North Pole? But we can't tell them it's the North Pole, so they have to lie to them and say that he's a Canadian toy maker. And all I could think of was her telling her parents, like, oh, yeah, I have a husband. He lives in Canada. You've probably never heard of him.
I have a question.
Yeah.
First, this is a question mainly for Brad, I think. So before all of that, there's of course a scene, because this is a fucking movie, where Santa's like, well, obviously we're going to have a boy. And Mrs. Claus is like, obviously we're going to have a girl. It's like, gee, thanks, movie.
Like, yeah, obviously you're going to have a child. Why do you have to... Yeah, why do you have to gender the baby now?
Like, doesn't meld the entire fucking ice cap to a gender reveal party. Thanks, Santa.
Yeah, really? Half of the world's on fire because some dude wanted a baby boy. Do you guys see the one gender reveal video where, like, it's a couple, like, shooting off, like, flares, you know, like colored flares, and then the dad is holding his backwards, and he pulls the cord on the flare, and it hits him right in the nuts?
No, please send that to us and put that in the show notes.
I'll find it. I'll put it in the show notes for you. It's beautiful.
I think we can all agree gender reveals, literally the worst and possibly a scourge upon humanity.
Yeah, like, it... Gender reveals are actively destroying the country right now.
And that's not hyperbole or an exaggeration.
No, half of the West Coast is on fire right now because somebody lit off like a gender reveal firework and then started a forest fire. Which I'm laughing at it because it's the stupidest possible thing that could happen in 2020.
It is so extremely terrible.
It's probably the actual truly worst part of social media is this trend where if you just find something that's easy enough to imitate, people will start doing it, but just adding more shit to it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, it's the reason that fucking the Ice Bucket Challenge, Harlem Shake, anything like that catches on, because it's an immediately easily copyable thing that you could just add extra shit to it.
See, just to one-up it. Really ridiculous wedding proposal, or like marriage proposals. I think that was like that was before gender reveals, was the stupid, like, oh, we're gonna have a musical in Home Depot as a marriage proposal. This is a real thing that happens. This is real thing that happens.
I found the tweet and I'm putting it in the chat.
Thank you.
And the thumbnail image is already just perfect.
I mean, gender reveals are terrible, but there are some really good videos like that of just like complete social Darwinism.
Oh, the Schadenfreude is just magnificent.
I remember another one. I saw one where it was it was like a car and it was all like cherried out and they had like a NOS on it. And then the smoke from the car was supposed to be the color of the gender, but then the car got on fire and then the house caught on fire. Kind of worth it. I mean, I hope nobody was harmed, but come on.
We say all of that. And now I have to ask this question. What kind of gender reveal ceremony would Santa and Mrs. Claus have?
I mean, obviously, they would pull the whole Tim Allen thing, so it would probably still involve, like, a motorcycle and some level of machismo, because, of course,
I would. I picture it's, like, a ball drop, like a New Year's Eve, but instead of, like, an actual ball, it's just a snow globe, and it crashes down, and 1,000 pink or blue beads just scatter everywhere.
So Santa sets off a gender reveal pipe bomb?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Basically, yes. I was describing that, but yeah, that's exactly what that is.
I mean, if you're the type of person that cares to announce whether your kid's going to be male or female before it's born, and you think people will care about this, you can just fucking say it on Facebook. You can say, hey, we're going to have a boy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, it's that simple. You don't have to have a big, stupid party that destroys half of the fucking country.
Right.
In fact, I'm going to make it official, Christmas Creeps. We wish you wouldn't have a giant party that destroys half the country.
Yes.
No. Absolutely. Agreed. Honestly, though, what happened to, like, the guns that shoot flags? Why not just have a flag that says it's a boy or it's a girl?
Oh, they banned those because of the Joker movie.
Sorry. Yeah.
When the Joker and Harley Quinn have a baby, that's exactly what's going to happen. Ugh. Anyway. So, yeah, they decide to bring Carol's parents to the North Pole, but have this entire charade where they lie to them and hide the fact that it's actually the North Pole. And during this scene where they, like, change the North Pole into, like, a bunch of Canadian stereotypes, I noticed in the background there was one shot that where there was, like, a sign up that said 387 years without an accident. And my immediate thought was, is that not counting the time that Tim Allen killed Santa Claus?
Well, that happened in, what, Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, something like that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, technically not a North Pole accident.
Fair enough. That's not a workplace accident. That's true.
This is one of the scenes of Tim Allen going back into Tim Allen mode when he's arguing with Alan Arkin about, like, oh, why is everyone so short? It's like, oh, it's because the Canadians are short. You ever been to Canada? No, fuck you then.
Yeah. I do.
I mean, it also makes me feel bad because Alan Arkin was just kind of like, no, I guess I haven't.
Yeah, you're right. But Alan Arkin, I don't know if that's, I've seen him in lots of movies and he does just kind of act this way, but I feel like he's putting on the Alan Arkin bit, like, a lot.
He's doing an impression of Kevin Pollak doing an impression of him.
Yes.
Oh, what the hell's going on here? I don't know. What am I looking at here? Is this a Christmas thing? What am I, like, that's every single line out of his mouth is just, what am I looking at here? And it's great. Yeah, it's great.
I'd imagine part of Arkin's contract was Pollock is not allowed to look at me. He's not allowed to talk to me. He's not allowed to be in the same building as me.
We're skipping ahead because, like, we haven't even talked about the antagonist of the film yet. Of course, this film has to have an antagonist. So the Council of Historical Fictional Beings has a meeting. Once again, I'm not entirely sure why they're having a meeting at all.
The reason they're having this meeting is because Jack Frost is being an asshole.
Oh, that's right. It's an emergency meeting about Jack Frost, yeah. So Jack Frost is in this movie, you guys. And
yeah,
this is the second time this year we've encountered Jack Frost.
Why didn't he call his holiday Frostivus?
Frostivus for the rest of us.
I think they would have allowed him to do it if he called it Frostivus. Frostivus. Frostivus was just like, no, you're trying too hard, buddy.
Basically, Jack Frost is being brought up on charges because apparently he's trying to usurp Christmas from Santa Claus.
Because why not?
Because why not?
He has been charged with wanting to sit at the big kids' table.
Pretty much. He just wants to be recognized, you guys. And so Jack Frost is played by Martin Short, who I honestly feel like is the only person in this film who doesn't look entirely miserable. And I think it's because every other person is sick of Martin Short. They're all miserable because he's in the movie.
It scans.
But he's having a blast being a piece of shit to everybody.
Yeah, a quote on Rotten Tomatoes is that Jack Frost is, quote, an evil cross between Liza Minnelli and Liberace.
Whoa!
That's about right.
That's pretty apt, yeah. I'll give him that. But he's like, so they've taken Martin Short and they've just like, you know how people used to have frosted tips in the 90s? They've frosted everything. His hair and his face and his clothes and everything. And it must have been a nightmare for him to have to sit through that. Brad, tell me about Jack Frost.
He's the worst. Jack Frost is, he's everything that you imagine Jack Frost would be. They play him up as this smooth talking, quick thinking trickster type. But I mean, come on. Come on. He's just kind of comes off as annoying and needy. Yeah. Look, half of the movie is him. So to continue on the plot synopsis, he gets shut down for having his own holiday. So he proposes his form of penance is to help Santa Claus out because Santa Claus is behind schedule. And of course, right. this is all part of his grand master plan to usurp Christmas. And half the movie is him getting a snow globe and getting into the right position to get Santa Claus to say he never wanted to be Santa Claus. That's half this movie. It's an hour before the main conflict of this movie actually happens. Before that, it's all him just sabotaging stuff.
The titular escape clause is if you get Santa's snow globe, because every Santa throughout history has had their own snow globe, and you hold it and you shake it and you say, I wish I had never been Santa at all, you go back in time to when you became Santa and get to not do it.
It's... Right. Which, so John, you mentioned every Santa has his own snow globe. See the snow globe room in the film. So I have to assume all of the floating snow globes in the snow globe room are snow globes that belonged to all the former Santa Claus.
Yes, it's dead Santa storage.
Yes.
There's a sign up front of the North Pole that says dead Santa storage.
We got to get into the whole time travel thing because there are a lot of questions I have.
Okay, so yeah, let's just jump straight to it because it's the important part of the film.
Because nothing else happens other than Jack Frost sabotaging a bunch of stuff to try to stress out Santa Claus in order to get him to say those magical words, and also Jack Frost wanting to jump the bones of Scott's mother-in-law.
Yes, which, fair.
We're going to leave that where it is.
I mean, it's Anne Margaret. I mean, it's like, yeah, that makes sense.
It's Anne, yeah. I mean, everybody in the film who's not Tim Allen tries to, you know, put the creep on her. And, you know, maybe it worked and maybe it didn't. But the first hour of this film is just family drama. And in the background, Jack Frost is just kind of doing his thing and being a jerk. And then 30 minutes from the end of the film, the thing happens that the entire movie is, like, based on and written about. And it's Jack Frost convinces Scott to... that he doesn't want to be Santa anymore, and they go back in time, and Jack Frost kills Santa himself and puts on the suit and becomes Santa Claus.
Which is really funny, because I didn't see him enter any sleigh.
John, yes. Please, extrapolate.
All right, here, let's go. I'm going to search in Google for him putting on the suit and entering the sleigh, because we're going to get this full quote here. In putting on the suit and entering the sleigh... the wearer waives any and all rights to any previous identity, real or implied, and fully accepts the duties and responsibility of Santa Claus in perpetuity or until such time the wearer becomes unable to do so by either accident or design. That implies that the escape clause can't exist either. Because not wanting to does not count as being unable to.
Yeah.
And also, Jack Frost does not actually enter the sleigh. He just puts on the coat and just teleports through time.
Yeah, and magic disappears into Santa Land.
I don't like it. So the movie does this thing where Scott skips forward 12 years, but apparently Jack Frost doesn't. But then, so bad. Okay, there's that.
It's Hot Tub Time Machine. It's the Hot Tub Time Machine time travel rules.
What are the hot night? Please educate me.
At the end of Hot Tub Time Machine, when they figure out all the shit in the past, they go forward. And it cuts to John Cusack just looking around this house that is clearly his house, but he doesn't actually remember any of the shit that happened. And he's like, it's literally like years of him, like years and years and years of pictures of him and his wife on the walls. And while Once in a Lifetime is playing, and it's the creepiest fucking scene because it's just like, oh, all of these things happened. I was there. I don't remember any of them. Cool.
It's the Back to the Future thing again, where like Marty goes on this wacky adventure through time and changes history. And when he gets back to the new present, everybody has a different memory of history except for him.
So there's that. But there's another inconsistency in this film. Not even the whole Jack Frost gets to live the 12 years where Scott Calvin doesn't. So after Jack puts on the suit and doesn't enter the sleigh, as we notice, he becomes Santa Claus, right? And then Scott A is immediately ushered forward 12 years into the future, or into present day, basically, if he had never put on the suit. Are you guys still with me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Having no memory of what happened in the last 12 years, but remembering that he was Santa Claus in what we'll call timeline A. Now we're in timeline B, okay. Right?
All right.
So, as you can imagine... we can go back into the plot summary. He fixes everything and gets back to... He gets Jack Frost to hold the orb and say that he doesn't want to be Santa Claus. And they go back in time 12 years again to when the Santa fell off the roof in the original movie. But there's another Scott Calvin, that the original Scott Calvin, who comes out of the door and yells, which kills Santa Claus. Which I was wondering if they were going to, like, have Scott intentionally also kill Santa like Jack Frost did and commit a murder so he can become Santa Claus. But no, they have... You guys are following me, right?
I'm with you so far.
Yeah, basically this alternate Scott, like, undoes his own existence.
Yeah, so... But there's, like, a looper situation. So let's say... Let's say that... Oh, I don't know. There's... You get where I'm going with this, right? Like, the first time it happens... The first time when Jack puts on the suit, Scott replaces his former self and still has his memories of the alternate timeline, or the current, you know, the canonical timeline.
Yeah, the Santa Claus prime line, basically.
Yeah, but let's say they're, like, both, you know, like, fighting each other when they go back in time yet again. Let's say somebody else puts on the suit. What if they stop Scott Calvin being...
What if Charlie puts on the suit?
Yeah, that's where I was gonna
exactly.
Go, yeah.
Exactly. Let's say Charlie puts on the suit.
Okay, I think we're getting lost here.
What happens to Scott Calvin? One of them dies. One of them goes away, is all I'm trying to say.
We need to go back to a frame of reference we understand. Okay, so we have Santa defeats Jack Frost timeline and Jack Frost defeats Santa timeline.
Yes. But then there's an alternate timeline, which is neither of them prevail timeline.
Yeah,
somebody
Smash
else
Brothers.
Becomes... Somebody else comes, gets on the suit. That's the Santa Claus Warriors definitive edition.
That's the Master Hand becomes Santa Claus timeline.
Where a time wizard interferes and has a huge crush on Santa Claus and brings all of the Santas together in one giant mishmash.
I've seen this episode of Rick and Morty. Nothing good happens out of this.
You guys get where I'm going with this. I mean, it is a children's movie, but obviously they did not put any thought into how this works whatsoever. And it's there for the sake of convenience.
Yeah.
The answer is this is a film meant for children and not 30-something nerds who care about time travel way too much.
Yeah, this is a lazy cash grab is what it is.
Yeah.
But I repeat myself because we're talking about the Santa Claus.
Right, but your point is taken because, like... So the prime Scott Calvin, okay, so the prime Scott Calvin ceases to exist when past Scott Calvin puts on the suit as he's supposed to, correct?
I'm going to make a diagram after we're done with this show, and you can put it in the show notes, because it's hard to,
but basically,
I don't know.
This skewed avenue of the timeline ceases to exist as soon as everything gets put back the way it's supposed to be.
Right. It's a ripple.
I mean, this is literally just Fry and Nibbler going back and making sure that Fry falls over.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But I'm just saying somebody's getting their memory erased. Somebody's ceasing to exist as a result of this. And I guess the answer is it's the two people that are ceasing to exist as a result of this are businessman Scott Calvin, 12 years in the future, and Jack Frost.
Right. But also, I mean, so they're trying to kill two birds with one stone by doing the Back to the Future thing, but also doing the It's a Wonderful Life thing. Because after Scott has become, you know, alternate timeline businessman Scott, he has to go and, you know, find his family, see if everything's okay. So his wife and Neil... are now divorced. Neil has taken their daughter to the North Pole because Jack Frost has turned the North Pole into a theme park. Meanwhile, Charlie wants absolutely nothing to do with Scott because Scott has never been there for Charlie. And it's just kind of like a miniature hell version of where things would have gone if the first Santa Claus had never happened.
And right. The theme park, everybody is absolutely miserable at the theme park. Until Tim Allen starts doing violence, then everyone's happy.
Yeah, because that's fun.
Can we talk for a moment about... This has been a long-standing theme of this show, I think, and of Christmas movies in general. How disingenuous it is for Disney, of all groups, yeah, corporations to like have the whole anti-consumerism theme parks or misery angle when they are the kings of the very thing that they are trying to more or less rally against. Like, obviously,
1,000,000%, yes.
Obviously,
it's literally Garfield going,
box.
I wonder who that sign's for.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. It is to check the box and have the teachable moment that everything's not like, oh, I don't know.
And Disney, I know it's Disney keeps doing it too, because did you guys see the Tim Burton Dumbo movie?
I heard about it from I saw your review of it, I believe.
The entire like third act takes place in Michael Keaton's like weird wacko corporate circus, which is basically like OG Disneyland, but they don't call it that. And the whole movie is like, oh yeah, this place is warped and fucked up. And wow, maybe Disneyland is actually a bad thing.
Yeah. It's like 1-to-1. It has like Tomorrowland in it, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah. Or it's got like a Fantasyland, which is just nothing but like, it's like a Carnival Midway, which has like freak show stuff in it. It's bizarre. But they're basically like painting it as like a 1-to-1, like this is what Disneyland literally is.
This movie actually got a legit laugh out of me. I'll admit that.
I have to say the same thing, yes.
It was when Tim Allen pulled out a giant candy cane and started beating Santa cops with it.
Okay. Joe?
The one legitimate laugh is basically anything that Judge Reinhold does in the film. Because Judge Reinhold is back as Neil again, and the film just lets him loose because it finally realizes that Neil is a stupid character, and he just has fun with it.
But he teaches the elves how to do fucking yoga.
Yes! He teaches the elves how to do yoga, which is great. But the thing that actually made me laugh was at the very beginning when he meets Scott again, and Scott's like, oh, hey, that's a nice sweater, and he lifts his shirt up and says, it's reversible. And he's just holding his shirt up in front of everybody.
I got no laughs. No laughs. No laughs from Brad this time. And I'm usually pretty easy to get.
This is just a black hole of entertainment. Like, these movies are, like, it's a precipitous drop from the first one. Where the first one is, you know, we've talked about this last time. The first one is a legitimate sort of look at divorced families in the 90s and how one jaded person can sort of actually turn it around and be a decent human being with actual morals and values. And then the second one is sort of accidentally entertaining because it's kind of about fascism, but not really.
The second one's basically a cartoon.
Yeah. And then there's this one, which is just the third one.
Yeah.
It's just, oh, we have to make another one. Okay, let's do that. And nobody seems to care or even wonder why they're all even here. It's just, it exists because it must, because money.
Speaking of money, this one still did fairly reasonably well, didn't it?
I think so, yeah.
It definitely made back its budget because it was super shoestring.
Yeah, it cost $12 million to make and it made $111 million at the box office.
Oh,
it was number two when it came out, beaten by Borat.
Oh,
how dire was... I mean, things are bad in 2020, but like at least the media landscape is a little bit better, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know. They're threatening to bring back Borat, so...
I mean,
oh, are they?
Fuck all that. I mean, if you want to have some good nostalgia, Pin 15 Season 2 just came out.
That's true. I need to catch up on that.
I love the reviews here that Wikipedia kind of aggregates here. Eric D. Snyder, the first time with enthusiasm, the second time with affection, and the third time for a paycheck.
pretty much.
Mark Kermode, the cinematic equivalent of tertiary syphilis.
Oh my god. Yeah, this is...
So let's finish it up. He goes to the North Pole Resort. Lucy and Judge Reinhold are there.
Sorry, can we talk about how bullshit the trick that Scott Calvin pulls is? Because I don't even think magic globes work this way. Sorry, go on.
So he goes there. He gets Lucy to help him because Lucy, despite being a little more of an asshole, because everyone in this universe is a little more of an asshole, still agrees to help him. She goes and steals Jack Frost's Santa snow globe. And... she throws up the air. Jack Frost catches it, and Scott plays a recording of Jack saying, "I wish I had never been Santa at all," that he recorded
on a pen,
on a talk boy.
Yeah.
Do you think the magic doesn't know that it's not him saying it? Like, it's not a dog.
I think the magic is relatively sentient. It's just like, you know what? Fuck this guy.
Okay. I guess I can suspend my disbelief that much, but it felt like kind of bullshit.
Listen, rules are rules, okay? If he said it at all under any circumstance, it's the law.
Because didn't he say it sarcastically, too?
Oh, yeah. He was like, oh, remember that time I got you to say, I wish I was never Santa Claus? And meanwhile, that's really what Tim Allen was recording.
Yeah.
But
most lawyer-y thing ever.
Well, he's a lawyer, so. So he goes.
No, he's not.
The entire point in the first movie is that he was a fucking lawyer. That's what the pun was about.
No, he's an executive at a toy company. That's the whole point, is that he's a bullshit executive at a toy company that doesn't care about kids.
Motherfucked this entire series.
Yes. But yeah, everything's put back to normal. Except, okay, the most horrifying thing in the entire movie is when Jack Frost, who is it? Lucy, Scott's, ex-wife's daughter.
She does the voice of one of the fucking dogs in Santa Buddies.
Yeah, she's a Santa Buddy. She's Rosebud in Santa Buddies. Ugh. And also, incidentally, is the daughter of Bill Mumy.
Bill Mumy, the science goomy?
Yes. The kid from Lost in Space, the original 60s Lost in Space. His daughter is the girl in Santa Claus 3. But when she finds out what Jack Frost is doing, and she calls her mom and Neil to, help, Jack Frost freezes her mom and Neil and puts them in a closet, and the frozen white Judge Reinhold statue is the most horrifying thing I've ever seen in a children's film.
I wonder if that prop still exists somewhere in this world, and if so, I wonder if I can buy it for a reasonable amount of money and ship it to your house.
Well, I think we just found our next Kickstarter campaign.
How much extra to get Judge Reinhold to deliver it himself?
If Judge Reinhold showed up at my house covered in white frost, I would, honestly, that's okay. That would scare the hell out of me, too. But yeah, it's just this white statue with a blank, expressionless look on his face. It's just, it gave me the creeps. But so everything has been changed back to normal. Everybody's happy and good, except Mom and Neil are still frozen, and Jack Frost refuses to unfreeze them.
He specifically says he can't.
He literally says he can't without killing himself, which is a strange flex.
The movie never really gets into this. It kind of hints at that there's a deleted subplot of Jack Frost doesn't want to be Jack Frost, but he's just kind of cursed.
Yeah, but I can't unfreeze someone without unfreezing myself. That's like saying the Tooth Fairy can't get money from himself without killing himself after pulling a tooth. It doesn't make sense. The Sandman kills himself every time he puts himself to sleep. Like you do. Also, Michael Dorn gets a lot more to do in this film than the last one, and I appreciated that. But Lucy hugs Jack Frost, and her warm hug thaws his icy heart.
Which was a thing that was established in the movie, but we don't really care enough to mention.
Yeah, it's whatever. But then the unthawed Jack Frost looks like Spock at a wedding. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. And then the baby comes and everything is great. Oh, the baby. Hey. So they decide to name the baby after Alan Arkin's character. Scott says that he named it after after the baby's grandpa, and they call the baby Buddy Claus. So Alan Arkin's name is Buddy. And that makes me think he's Buddy the Elf.
Buddy the Elf.
And that makes me think that Elf is a period piece that takes place in, I assume, the 50s. And that Scott Calvin is Buddy the Elf's son-in-law. I hate everything. I hate all of this. Because now it's canon. Now that we've said it, it exists in the world now.
I'll shoot this movie with a canon.
That Elf is the unintentional prequel to the entire Santa Claus trilogy. Fuck this ridiculous Earth. Stop it. I want off.
All I can find so far is a production crew jacket for the Santa Claus 3. I'm searching so hard right now.
All I've been able to find is a Game Boy Advance game for Santa Claus 3, The Escape Clause.
Really?
Yes, I just put it in the back channel.
Oh, thank you.
So, go play the Santa Claus 3 game on your off time, everybody.
If you want to give me that robot that they were building, I'll take one of those.
We keep saying we're going to do like an entire episode on like Christmas video games, and then I always say, oh, no, there's not that many Christmas games in the world. And, of course, we're always finding more. So what the hell do I know?
Did you guys know there are Santa Claus Funko Pops? Because, of course, there are.
Like Tim Allen Santa Claus Funko Pops?
Tim Allen Santa Claus and Scott Calvin Santa Claus Funko
Listen,
Pops.
Give me a Bernard Funko Pop or fuck off. All I want is a Bernard. Neil. I want 10 different Neils in 10 different Bill Cosby sweaters.
Different colorways. You gotta collect them all.
Absolutely. Every sweater is reversible. So, yeah, the Santa Claus 3 is a hellish experience, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. It's just an absolute nothing of a movie for 90 minutes, and I genuinely apologize for making the two of you watch it with me.
It's okay, I watched it on 1.5 speed, because I think from now on you're going to have to assume that unless it's something that I think might be possibly somewhat good, I'm going to be watching it at an increased speed.
Which made the very end of this movie go by at warp speed, because, hey, this movie also fast-forwards to the end.
It also made the scene with the reindeers incredibly terrifying. Like, they're all doing their stupid, like, gremlin talk, like, and they're farting up a storm. It's the worst. It was disgusting to listen
to. I'll bet. But yeah, like, with the scene where they, like, they're carting Carol out to the delivery room to deliver the baby, and they, like, literally fast forward the movie to get through the scene.
It was like whiplash. It was crazy.
I genuinely appreciated that. Like, I did not need to see that scene because they did it at the beginning of the movie.
They just played the same footage. I think they reshot it.
I 1,000,000% believe that. So, yeah, that's the Santa Claus 3, everybody. So let's take our escape clause and go to the crankometer so we can get out of here. The crankometer is our XY axis for how to rate these Christmas movies. The X axis, if you're not familiar, is the Christmas quotient, which is how Christmassy a film is. And the Y axis is how good the film is, the quality quotient. So, gentle friends, X axis, how Christmassy is the Santa Claus 3? Take your time.
Honestly, other than the rush that Scott Calvin is in, this plot could have taken place at any time of the year.
It really
could be delivering in June, and Jack Frost could be trying to take over the North Pole of June.
The only ticking clock here is that, like, she doesn't want to deliver the baby on Christmas Eve.
Yes, and there's not really even a moral about the Christmas spirit. It's more like, you should appreciate your family.
Right.
I guess.
Which
could apply
to basically any movie. Like, this plot, aside from the time travel crap, could have been any movie.
Yes. Like, there's not even... They kind of jump into the right ocean for a moment as far as, like, the B plot or the B timeline where he turns it into a resort. And it's like, nah, it's not about that.
Right.
But other than that,
but that's hypocritical coming from Disney though as well.
Yeah, well, of course, that's a thing. I think that's a through line with a lot of Christmas movies, basically all the Christmas movies. I was thinking about this actually.
Uh-huh.
Let's take the Grinch for example. The Grinch, the most recent Grinch, not 2000, although I'm sure 2000 had the same issue.
Both
Grinch Benedict, 2000
Benedict Cumber Grinch.
Yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch and Grinch 2000 both ostensibly have an kind of anti-consumerist message where it's like, oh, you don't need all that stuff to have a good Christmas. It's all about family and togetherness, right?
Right.
But both of these movies are created, of course, to make money and to push merchandise. Absolutely a ridiculous amount of merchandise, I'm certain. right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. I think any piece of Christmas media that's been made after what?
Like 1983?
Yeah, maybe 1960 is very disingenuous with the whole approach to, you know.
Right, like I was willing to give like A Christmas Story kind of a pass, but yeah, basically.
Basically, I'm saying any version of the Grinch outside of the Theodore Geisel book and possibly the original cartoon is being completely disingenuous and trying to have it both ways. And that is a problem in most Christmas children's media. Like, sure, A Cosmic Christmas. Sure, they're not selling any. They're not making any money off of that, and they're not selling anything. But any mainstream Christmas thing that's come out that tries to push any sort of anti-consumerist message is absolutely pissing down somebody's neck. It's the worst. And I hate it. It's a problem in all of these films.
I hate to say that South Park got something right, but I think in this case they got it right. There was an episode where Stan's dad, Randy, just says, oh yeah, that's the spirit of Christmas, commercialism. Like, Christmas is all about buying stuff and selling stuff because that's how the economy works.
Yes. They call it Black Friday for a reason.
Yeah, calling the kettle Black Friday. But
I don't know where I was going with this.
I get it.
It's the worst. It's not Christmassy at all. It's completely disingenuous. There's not even a Christmas message as, like...
Yeah, there's a vague, like, one scene of Scott realizing that family is important, and that's basically it.
All I'm trying to say is if it did have a Christmas message, it would be patronizing at this point to the nth degree, because this is such a cynical cash grab, even beyond, like, what you would say, like, maybe Grinch 2018 was, all I'm trying to say.
Well, and two, you know, we said this about Santa Claus 2. That was, like, a kind of a post 9/11 Santa Claus movie. This one is, like, deeply entrenched in, like, mid-2000s, like, international paranoia, and all we want out of a Santa Claus movie in 2006 is to just tell us that family is okay, is an okay thing to have, and maybe sell us some Christmas toys, because honestly, who else cares? I don't even know where I'm going with this at this point, because this movie is
negative one. Let's give it a negative one. Fuck it.
I'm almost willing to go to a negative two, my friend.
I'll do it. Negative two.
Sure, it's about Santa Claus, but really, is it? Is it?
It's about family as much as the Star Wars sequel trilogy is, okay?
here's what I'll say to go to the negatives. Literally, the only time the fact that it's close to Christmas comes up is just to give it any sort of urgency to this matter. That's right. That's all.
We don't even get a... I don't even think any part of this movie happens on Christmas proper, I want to say.
Except that's the original film. Effect.
Right.
That's Christmas Eve, though.
Yeah,
is Christmas Eve. That's right. Oh, yeah, and they are in the theme park on Christmas Eve. Okay, never mind. Forget I said anything. Still doesn't matter. Negative two. I don't care.
I'm going to allow
this movie. Fuck this movie. It's... Okay.
Well, then Y-axis. I mean, how... Really, let's talk about how bad this thing is. Because even among Santa Claus films, this is precipitously worse than the first two. It's lazy. It feels like it doesn't even know what it's about or why it exists. Martin Short is doing whatever the hell Martin Short wants to do in this movie, and whatever.
Joe?
Yeah?
I'm about to hit you with a hot take.
Do it.
I think this is about as bad as two. I don't think any one of these two is worse than the other one. They're both equally just, ugh.
Really?
This didn't strike me as worse than two. I don't know why. I really didn't like two.
I think for me, it really is just the presence of Martin Short, because his character is so smug and self-absorbed that I realize it's a character that he's playing and not actually him, but...
This is the character Martin Short always plays, though.
Yeah, it's just maybe he's too good at it, and I hate him too much. But
okay, I'll say so. We had Martin Short as the enemy in this one,
yeah,
which is honestly better than having a second Tim Allen.
That's kind of what I thought. Honestly, kinda.
What did we get? What did we give the movie last week?
We all already forgot. We gave Santa Claus 2 a 0, negative 2.
I'll give this one a negative 2 as well.
That's yeah, I'm going to say they're equally bad. Can you argue us down? Do you want to argue us? Try to argue us down to a negative 3, Joe?
I mean...
Here's what I'll say.
Okay.
Here's what I'll say. Martin Short is probably worse than a second Tim Allen, to an extent. But at least this movie didn't do for the third fucking time that goddamn thing of, hey, here's a 60s toy adult, now you like me.
Yes. But Plus what if... 2 had all of the really bad, like, I'm using Christmas magic to woo this woman
okay, stuff. Yeah, I recognize that now.
Like, a good quarter of the Santa Claus 2 was like a weird, bad romance movie, but not really, because it's still a kid's movie.
True, yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. 2 had its parts that were funnier, but, like, on the whole, I feel like they're equally bad.
I guess where I'm going to have to come down on it then is, like, just structurally, the way this movie's written makes no sense, because it's weird to me that they wait until the last half hour to do all the time travel stuff. Like, that should be the whole movie.
Oh yeah, no, we hate movies that do this. Like, the entire thing is movies need to get down to what the fuck they're doing within like the first half hour. I'll give you half an hour to set up what's going on, but then you have to go with it.
I think that's the strongest argument for a negative 3 is how poorly paced this movie is.
I think so, because the first hour is nothing but, you know, the family drama, the family conflict, and it's just not that interesting, because the whole thing is just, oh, we have to show them around the North Pole, but they can't know it's actually the North Pole.
I mean, imagine Back to the Future if it took them over an hour to get to 1955.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I will give you that, Joe. I'm willing to go down to a negative 3 because 2 is a better paced movie, because at least within 30 minutes, he's trying to find a lady.
But then I have to say this, because if I didn't, I would be like a disingenuous host of a Christmas movie podcast. I also have to recognize that It's a Wonderful Life does this exact same thing too. Clarence does not show up until like the last half hour of that film.
Yes, but the thing is, that's a good movie.
I know.
Or at least a decent one.
I know. But so what I'm really saying is, like, they're trying maybe too hard to crib It's a Wonderful Life. So yeah, maybe in that sense.
But there. There's
the negative, right,
negative 4.
Clarence shows up at the fucking start of It's a Wonderful Life. The thing with It's a Wonderful Life is the start of it is a bunch of flashbacks.
Yes, I know, but in the he doesn't show up in the flesh to talk to George Bailey to do the thing that everybody knows about It's a Wonderful Life until the very end. And it's the same situation here.
So It's a Wonderful Life earns it, though.
I agree. Yes, I know that.
Because with the way the pacing works, if it started out with George Bailey on the bridge, I just about said George C. Scott, and I was like, no, it's not that.
George Bailey on the bridge of the USS Enterprise.
So anyway, if it started with George about to kill himself, then Clarence showed up, and then they went through a bunch of flashbacks, I don't think it would have worked as well.
Yeah,
probably not. No,
I guess It's a Wonderful Life is the weird, like, I mean, it's not really a fucking Christmas movie for that matter.
Yeah, it's the weird anomaly that like proves all of proves the rules basically. But I guess all I'm really saying is that this movie tries to ape that, but doesn't understand why that movie works.
Because nobody cares about Scott Calvin and Santa.
There it
is. Or at least we don't.
Yeah.
-3.
-3. There was a moment where Brad said -4, and I almost want to hold him.
Just when you were arguing that it was trying to ape It's a Wonderful Life and absolutely not pulling it off, which is an offense in itself. Like, to have the audacity to think you could do this.
And companies to do this, it's a Disney production.
Yeah. No, I'm willing to stand at a -3.
We've belabored this point long enough. It's a -3. So we're going to come down on the Santa Claus 3, the escape clause, as a -2, -3. That's our final verdict. And I hope we never have to come back around to this series ever again.
Good riddance. Please do not make a 4, because if it's so, we have to watch it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the Faustian bargain we've made with ourselves.
I'm gonna invoke the Smurf clause here, Joe.
Okay.
I'm a full adult now with full responsibilities. But let's say that we are still alive and theaters still exist in the future. And the Santa Claus 4 gets a theatrical release. I will drive down to where you are currently living. And the two of us, if not the three of us, are going to go see the Santa Claus 4 in theaters and review it the night that it comes out. Premiere. Opening night. We're going to do it.
Direct to you, the listener.
If I catch wind that they're making a Santa Claus 4, I will go get in my car, drive to Tim Allen, and then some things that are parodies and not legally actionable happen.
Legally distinct violence. No.
I didn't say anything about violence. I'm just saying, just a... You know, just a parody.
John will enact the plot of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back to make sure Santa Claus 4 does not happen.
No, but seriously.
Man, if I get a monkey.
Mark my words. John, you should join in. We'll pregame the entire thing, just like I did the live-action Smurfs.
Can I bring the monkey?
Yes.
Okay.
Man, this is the worst fucking tontine we've ever come up with. This death pact we've made with ourselves. But yes, if a Santa Claus 4 actually happens, we will be the first to tell you all about it, because that's the kind of show this is. That's the kind of people we are. This is what we love to do, and we hope you enjoy listening to us do it. So I think that's going to have to wrap it up for Christmas Creeps, unless there's anything else we need to talk about tonight.
Video game chat.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah. One last thing I do want to mention. Dial code Santa Claus. Is coming out on 4K Blu-ray this fall, and I could not be more excited.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Vinegar Syndrome is putting it out. I have already pre-ordered my copy, and I will put the link in the show notes so you can get yours as well. It's going to look great. It's going to be a bizarre experience, but I can't wait for that. So yeah, that will have to do it. But until then, until next time, if you want to email us anything, like questions, like why we still do this show, or comments, or recommend things you want us to do, at some point we are going to actually get to these recommendations. But
I think we're free and clear now that we've freed ourselves from Scott Calvin's icy grip, right?
I think
so. We're coming up on Home for the Horror Days, I think?
Yes. Home for the Horror Days is just around the corner. So we've got some options for Home for the Horror Days. But you can email all of those things to us at xmascreeps@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at Christmas Creeps on Twitter. Go to facebook.com/Christmas Creeps. We use that site kind of sparingly, but it's still there. We're on the YouTubes. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Stitcher. I tried to submit us to Amazon/Audible this week, so we'll see if that goes through. But yeah, we're all over the podcast universe, so go find us, leave star ratings and reviews and all that fun stuff. Let people know that this is the Christmas podcast that you love going into the holiday season.
I am going to go ahead and call our shot for next time.
Do that.
Home for the Horror Days, and I found it available. We're watching Santa Slay.
Okay. Oh, that's going to be good. And by good, I mean awful. I can't wait. So for Christmas Creeps, y'all, I have been Joseph Wade.
I'm Johnny Five, the human robot.
I'm Bradford.
Smoke him if you got him, because Home for the Horror Days is around the corner. Good night. Dance to the beat that we like best.